When daylight crested Siler's Bald, I'd taken up my carpet bag and rifle and followed the middle prong toward Tuckalucky Cove. "Echo," Maw said, "if you be going to the settlements, you better lay down that rifle gun and set up a few nights with a needle. You take them Godey's ladies' books the pack peddler left with us and give them study. City folks dress a sight different than we uns, and you don't want to shame yourself." There was money coming to us, and I was to go fetch it home. Pa had wore hisself out scratching a living from a side hill farm, and a few months back he give up the fight and went west, as the saying was. We buried him yonder where the big oak stands and marked his place with letterin' on a stone. The boys were trapping beaver in the Shining Mountains far to the westward, and there was nobody to home but Regal and me, and Regal was laid up. He'd had a mite of a set to with a cross bear who didn't recognize him for a sacket. There'd been a sight of John and Clon before Regal stretched him out, Regal using what he had to hand, a knife and a double-bit axe. Trouble was, Regal got himself chawed and clawed in the doing of it and was in no shape for travel. Me, I'd been hunting meat for the table since I was shorter than the rifle I carried, and the last few years I'd killed so much I was selling meat to the butcher. No sooner did I get a mite of money more than what was needed than I began dreaming over the fancy fixins in Godey's fashion magazine. When a girl gets to be 16, it's time she set her cap for a man, but I'd yet to see one for whom I'd fetch and carry. Like any girl, I'd done a sight of dreamin', but not about the boys along Fightin' Creek or the Middle Prong. My dreams were of something far off and fancy. Part of that was due to Regal. Regal was my uncle, a brother to Pa, and when he was a boy, he'd gone off a-yonderin' along the mountains to the settlements. We had kinfolk down to Charleston, and he visited there before continuing on his way. He told me of folks he met there, of their clothes, the homes they lived in, the theaters they went to, and the fancy food. Regal had been out among them in his time, and I suspect he'd cut some fancy didos wherever he went. Regal was tall, stronger than three bulls, and quick with a smile that made a girl tingle to her toes. Many of them told me that very thing, and although many a girl set her cap for Regal, he was sly to all their ways and wary of traps. Oh, he had a way with him, Regal did. "Don't you be in no hurry," he advised me. "You're cute as a button, and you've got a nice shape. You're enough to start any man a-wondering where his summer wages went. You hold your horses. No need to marry up with somebody just because the other girls are doing it. I've been yonder where folks live different, and there's a better way than to spend your years churning milk and hoeing corn. But one word of caution. Don't you be letting the boys know how good you can shoot. Not many men would like to be bested by a spit of a girl not 5 feet tall." "I'm 5 feet two," I protested. "You mind what I say. When you get down to the settlements, you mind your P's and Q's. When a man talks to a girl, he's not as honest as he might be, although at the time he half believes it all himself. There's times a man will promise a girl anything and forget his promises before the hour's up." "Did you make promises like that, Regal?"
"No, I never.
When a woman sees a man she wants, there's no need to promise or even say very much. A woman will come up with better answers than any poor mountain boy could think up. I was kind of shy there at first. Then I found it was working for me, so I just kept on being shy. Women folks have powerful imaginations when it comes to a man, and she can read things into him he never knew was there, and like as not, they ain't." Turning to look back, I could still see Blanket and Thunderhead Mountains and the end of Davis Ridge. It was clouding up and coming on to rain. Philadelphia had more folks in it than I reckoned there was in the world. When I stepped down from the stage, I made query of the driver as to where I was wishful of going, and he stepped out into the street and pointed the way. The place I was heading for was a rooming and boarding house kept by a woman who had kinfolk in the mountains. It was reckoned a safe place for a young girl to stay. Not that I was much worried. I had me an Arkansas toothpick slung in its scabbard inside my dress and a little slit pocket where I could reach through the folds to fetch it. In my carpet bag, I carried a pistol. Most unmarried folks and others who were married ate in boarding houses them days. Restaurants were for folks with money or for an evening on the town. Folks who worked in shops and the like hunted places where there was room and board, although some roomed in one place and boarded elsewhere. Amy Sulky had 12 rooms to let, but she set table for 24. She had two setups for breakfast, one for noontime, as most carried lunches to their work or caught a snack nearby or from a street vendor. At supper time, she had two settings again. I'd writ Amy so she knew I was coming and had kept a place for me. A nice room it was, too. Mighty luxurious for the likes of me, with curtains to the windows, a rag rug on the floor, a bed, a chair, and a washstand with a white china bowl and pitcher on it. First thing when I got to my room was take a peek past the curtain, and sure enough, the man who followed me from the stage was outside, making like he was reading a newspaper. When a girl grows up in Indian country, hunting all her born days, she becomes watchful. Getting down from the stage, I saw that man see me like I was somebody expected. Making a point of not seeming to notice, I started off up the street, but when I stopped at a crossing, I noticed him fold his newspaper and start after me. Back in the high country, folks said I was a right pretty girl, but that cut no figure here. Any girl knows when a man notices her because she's pretty, but this man had no such ideas in mind. I'd hunted too much game not to know when I am hunted myself. If he wasn't following because he liked my looks, then why? Anybody could see I wasn't well off. My clothes were pretty because I'd made them myself, but they weren't fancy city clothes. As I didn't look to be carrying money, why should he follow me? My reason for coming to Philadelphia was to meet up with a lawyer and collect money that was due me. By all accounts, it was a goodly sum, but who could know that? Somebody might have talked too much. The lawyer himself, or his clerk, if he had such a thing. Most folks like to talk and seem important. Given special knowledge, they can't wait to speak of it. The only reason I could think of for someone to follow me was because he knew what I'd come for and meant to have it.